How are you doing tonight? Everybody okay on a beautiful fall evening? This is class number 2, and I've entitled it Growing a Solid, Flexible Self. And we'll get into that in just a moment. Now, a week has gone by since we met. Let's take about 10 minutes, even if that. If you have any questions, comments about what you heard last week or what you may have read between last week and tonight. Any comments, questions, any insights, any confusions? Yes?
Okay, I have a question about the theory about relationships on the very last page.
Okay, very last page, theory about relationships.
The very last paragraph says, most people remain at the level of differentiation attained by the time they left home.
Yeah, the comment in the paragraph is, most people remain at the level of differentiation as when they left their original family. Go ahead.
And then kind of goes on saying, adults can improve upon that level with hard work.
Adults can improve on that level of differentiation, think of emotional maturity, with hard work, therapy, and or crises when properly channeled. Because people don't normally, naturally seek to grow and mature. They seek to avoid it and wish for good things to happen to them without having to grow. Go ahead.
You want me to read the whole paragraph?
Go ahead. No, the reason I'm doing this is...
Because it's on the...
Yeah.
So, you know, I think I can miss the part, but basically the last sentence that kind of threw me,
right,
which was disconcerting a little bit, was technically only a small increment of change is possible after leaving one's original family.
Yeah, and that's an article from Roberta Gilbert, Extraordinary Relationships, and her comment at the end, which was a little distressing, is that small increments of change. That is her perspective. It's Roberta Gilbert. Others in the field disagree and say, through crises, therapy, and hard work, good amounts of change can be attained. But she is saying it takes a focus and hard work. So do not be discouraged. Even small amounts of change can make a huge, huge difference. Okay? So thanks for picking up on that. That was a worthy paragraph to pick up on. Like, oh, great. Change isn't really possible. Right? Yeah. It's like, okay, why do all this hard work for a little bit of change? Jeez, a lot of positives. Any other thoughts or comments about maybe what you might have read? Or maybe something that just didn't make sense? Yeah.
I have one, and it could just be that I'm trying to look back to my notes and find, but there was a comment you made last week about how if someone wants to share their feelings with you,
yes,
they're trying to manipulate you and to control.
All too often what I said, I didn't say that they were trying, I said that the majority of the reason as to why an individual shares their emotions with you is to influence and change you.
Okay, so what if I have a really rotten day?
Yes.
And I want to share that with Greg.
Yes.
Am I being a terrorist?
Do you think you're being a terrorist?
Sometimes.
Then you are.
Okay.
No, I guess if your spouse or whoever you're in a relationship with does something that upsets you or annoys you, I guess we're here to learn.
No, I know that, Greg.
We're here to learn the proper channels for how to...
Right. We're not there yet.
Right. Okay.
I haven't shared that piece yet.
Well, it's just been on my mind.
That's good. Okay. The idea that she is talking about is, I simply said, the majority of the reason, most of the time, that one human being shares what they are experiencing with another human being is probably to bring about an influence or a change. it is not so much to be known responsibly. Does that make sense? If a person shares within their hula hoop, I'm having a tough time right now, and they're willing to take responsibility for their statement, it's called sharing. The other person can say, tell me more about it. But if I'm having a tough time right now means I want you to do something about it, it's a statement designed to influence. So we're talking about the motives in the heart as to why and when something is shared. If a person says, I'm about to share something and I absolutely do not want you to do anything about it nor take responsibility, I simply want to be known. I'm having a tough time and I'm really angry and frustrated. The other person can say, thank you for sharing. I want to understand what's going on. That's different.
Yeah.
We'll do more of that next week on the topic of emotions. But thanks. I'm glad that you thought about it. I'm glad that you were mulling around. Well, when can I properly share emotions?
Right.
Yeah. Well, then announce it beforehand. Hey, Greg, I don't want you to do anything about this. I just want you to listen to me. I've had a rotten, terrible, horrible, horrible, horrible day. And Greg can nod his head and go, tell me more about it. And you can tell him all about it. And at the end, he can say, gosh, thanks for sharing. Maybe what can I do?
Well, if he doesn't want to listen.
He can say, okay, now we're on to the topic of talk for finding the value. If Greg can't find the value in listening to the most significant person in his life share what she wishes to share and she's not asking him to do anything about it and he can't find the value, I'd say, why is he in relationship?
Maybe he's got something else going on.
Then he can politely describe that. And there again, I want to see who's going to decide to do what, but he can properly share that. This is not the time. Could we postpone this and maybe share at 7 o'clock tonight when I've got psychological space to really engage? But this individual can thoughtfully present himself all the while finding the value in the relationship. It's going to be the difference between reacting and defending and inviting a relationship posture. Does that make sense? You still with me? Is everybody's in their own world right now? Hello. Okay. That's okay if you're in your own hula hoop, off in your own universe.
So I'm just the opposite. I don't ever disclose.
Okay.
Ever.
All right.
No matter what.
You don't find the value in that.
Well, why would I, No,
I just said you don't find the value in it.
Well, two crapped out people's twice as bad is the way I look at it.
Say that again.
Two crapped out people is twice as bad. If I've had a
Assuming that if you share what's inside of you, it will automatically infect the other person. Is that right?
That's my thought process.
Do you know that for a fact? Do you know that if you share what's inside of you, your partner or this other person who's listening will automatically absorb it and their life
She's
will be
so
terrible?
Sensitive, yes.
Okay, that is an assumption, right?
It is an assumption.
Okay. You might have a different perspective, correct?
Yes.
Ah.
I would love for him to share.
Ah.
Okay.
Well, I always just say everything's perfect. Smile like you do. I'm good at that.
We'll talk about the value of creating relationship and the value of sharing what's going on inside. Because, there are things that we do in life that we find the value in that in the immediacy we don't want to do. Did that make sense?
Sure.
But we find the value in doing it. Correct?
Like exercise and eating exercise.
Well, like going to the doctor, going to the dentist, exercise, eating right, choosing to do something that in the immediacy we could say, I don't want to do it, but I'm going to nonetheless do this because I find the long-term value. This is why I say, I don't expect anybody in my office to do anything that they can't find the value in doing. I don't advocate people to do things that they can't find the value to do. That's not my job. But everybody's concerned that I'm going to tell them to do things that I tell them to do. I'm not into that. I'm helping you find the value for doing something that may be difficult to do, and the only reason you're doing it is you find the value, or life has now been brought to your doorstep and you must make a decision. Even if you tell me I don't want to, you may have to. So that means you have to find the value. It's just life. Make sense? We're going to talk more of that about number four, about finding the value. Okay. I'm going to take some questions and we'll have some dialogue at the end. All right? So, my little clicker went off. Hang on a minute. Turn it back on. Last week I talked about two shifts. Do you remember the shift away from and the shift toward something? Do you remember any of that? Do you remember what we're shifting away from? If you don't, that's okay.
Outside influence.
Oh, that's great. We're shifting away from a focus on the outside. We're shifting away from trying to influence, teach, correct, change, confront others. We're shifting away from we need others to listen, accept, and understand us. We're shifting away from using the relationship and our relationship with other people as our soothing mechanism. I haven't talked anything about that just yet. But a lot of people use a relationship as their soothing mechanism. But that leaves them very dependent because they have to get the other person to cooperate with them. Make sense? They don't have an anchor inside their hula hoop. The other person is their anchor. The relationship is their anchor. They're dependent people. So they have to get the other person to listen, accept, understand them, and cooperate with them because they can't stand on their own two feet. They're needy people, and the center of their focus for their soothing mechanism is, quote, the relationship, which is a code word for the other person. Did that make sense? When people use the word relationship, they're talking about the other person. We are here to work on our relationship is code for I am here to work on the other person because I don't like what I'm getting out of this relationship. All right? So we're shifting away from that and we're making a shift to focusing inside our hula hoop and bumping up our growth. We're shifting away from all my problems in life will be solved if I can get you to listen, accept, and understand me and make the changes. I want you to give up on that. So when people come into my office and they say, I'm done. I'm the first one to say, that's probably the healthy side in you. What are you done with? Or they say, I can't go on like this anymore. They probably shouldn't. And it usually has something to do with they're trying to influence and change everybody else and nobody will cooperate with them. And they're done. And I want them to be done. Then they tell me, I'm scared. Of course you're scared, because now we got all your energy away from trying to change everybody else. And now it's only inside your hula hoop. What are you going to do with you? Got it? So we're shifting away from the outside. We're moving to the inside. Now, why make this shift? This is a little review. Why make this shift? Yes.
Your mic is coming in and out.
Okay. I'll put it up here and I'll just see if it makes a difference. And then if it still is coming in and out, we'll just have to check the battery. Thank you for telling me that. Thank you. Bill said, because inside our hula hoop is about the only thing we have a chance to control. We can influence others, and I'm all for that in the proper way. We'll talk about that. Oh, it just went out again, didn't it? I heard it. We can talk about influencing others in a proper way. But our best bet is to influence and change ourselves. Right? We make this shift because the nature of increased significance demands it. Remember the scale of significance? Do you remember that? Here's 100. Here's 0. The higher up the scale that you go, the stronger core you need inside, or your knees are going to buckle and you won't be able to handle the pressure of significant relationships. We'll talk more about that just in a moment. The nature of life requires this, so let's harness it. So I like to say, we're making a shift by addressing this core. We're making a shift by addressing the core. And this shift will help change the narrative in your life away from a victim to a victor. Victims are those who are complaining that they are trying to change everybody else, change the universe, and change things that are not necessarily changeable. Let's give up on that and change what you can change. Now, by doing that, you change the narrative from reactor to a responder. You're not going to protest about life. You're going to respond to life. You'll feel better. You'll like yourself better. We're changing a life of anxiety, fear, threat, and insecurity to adventure. So do you remember last week when I said in my illustration about helping our kids learn to ride roller coasters? Sally and I want to raise children into young adults who ride the ride of life so that the ride of life doesn't ride them. We can learn this every day. Every day is a chance to strengthen your core so that life is a grand adventure or it's filled with massive fear, threat, and insecurity with a weak core. A life of avoidance. A life of dreading interpersonal relationships because you're afraid you're going to be gobbled up. You're afraid you're going to be controlled. Trust me. Just like what Eleanor Roosevelt said about self-esteem. Nobody can make you feel insecure and unworthy without your permission. Even people who try to control you can't control you without your permission. Make sense? So we're changing the narrative. From powerless to empowered and from hopeless to hopeful. Because the best path for hope is a strengthened core, strengthened and tempered through real life experience. I do not sell hope when I do therapy. I do not sell hope in hope. I want people to experience hope by becoming stronger. I don't sell it. I want them to experience it by actually strengthening their core and responding with courage to life. Then they will get hopeful when they have a stronger character and can stand on their own two feet and do noble and courageous things. They will have hope. Right? Make sense? Okay, here we go. Stay with me. The more you have a solid core, the more you can tolerate differences in other people. The more you have a strong, solid core, the more you can love somebody that is so different from you and you don't have to require them to change. Amazing, isn't it? For those who think that oneness is in a significant relationship is sameness, I have news for you. You're married to somebody who's totally different than you. You married not you, right? Totally not you. So we can tolerate differences and actually approach them with a positive attitude. We can accept others and reality for who they are versus living a life protesting to change them for how you wish them to be. Give it up. Accept others just how they are. We can find positive value in why you do what you do. That's coming soon. We can be more active and less passive. We can have greater confidence and self-esteem. Last slide on review. What are we shifting to? We are going to grow. A. Anybody remember? What's tonight about? We're going to grow a solid self. A flexible, solid, flexible self. Not too rigid, not too chaotic. We're going to grow a self. We're going to learn to manage our emotional system. Good job. We're going to control our reactivity, angers, fears, threats, triggers. You're not going to get me off my dime. If you do, I'm going to learn from it. Okay? If I react to you, it's all about me. Trust me. It's not about you. You just hit my trigger button and I'm going to learn about it and become a better person. We're going to control our reactivity. We're going to find We're going to find the value for doing any of this. Why do you do anything every day? You better find the value. It can't be all for others. It can't be just for God. It can't be for your spouse. You have to find the value as to why you're doing anything. Look at yourself in the mirror and go, why am I doing this? You got to find the value. You got to find the value. The day you find the value, you'll be a happier person and know who you are and what you're doing and where you're going. And all of this can lead to increased
desire.
Good job. I like that, Julie. Increased desire. You can actually ride the ride and enjoy the ride. You're not a victim. Okay? Yay. Good job. So, here we go with tonight. Growing a solid, flexible self. And I hear some of you turning pages. Way to go. Now, some of you read the material. Yay. Thanks for doing that. I want to always encourage you, read some of the chapters posted. Even for the tonight, there's 3 or 4 chapters that I posted. This whole idea of a word that maybe you didn't ever know of before is the word differentiation. Is that a weird word for you? Have you ever heard that word? Can you guess what it means? When you differentiate, what are you doing? That's right. You're setting yourself apart from others. So the term originally comes from cellular biology. So what do cells do? They divide, they connect, and yet they're separate. Make sense? So here's a very important principle in relationships. Where we get the psychological concept of differentiation from biology is that in order to have a healthy connection, there must be separateness. Remember the hula hoop? Sure you do. Whoa, there it goes. I'm losing my hula hoops, people. All right, inside this hula hoop, this is my cell outer perimeter. This cell, this hula hoop, me inside my hula hoop, can now effectively connect with another person inside their hula hoop. They're inside theirs. I'm inside mine. We are relating. But if the closer we get and the more significant you become to me, watch how this happens, this breaks down and we merge, what's happened to our separateness? I've lost my boundary of myself.
More difficult to differentiate.
Excuse me?
More difficult to differentiate.
Yes, yes. Now, let's watch what happens, if you will, just for a moment. Can I borrow 2 people? Come on. Kendra, Patrick, come here. I'm just borrowing you. I'm not asking you to do anything except put this around you. Kendra, put this around you. Now, here's what we're going to do. We're not going to hula. Okay? All right. Now watch what happens. Let's move apart. Move apart. Now, each of us inside our hula hoop is relatively mature. If I'm in a 100-acre field all by myself inside my hula hoop, would you say this hula hoop and my core is easy to manage or more difficult to manage? It's easy. Thus, individuals alone in a 100-acre field all look mature. All the singles out there in life are less mature than they actually think because they haven't been tested. They're relatively mature. Does that make sense? Now, what if these two are my family members and we're getting together for a family outing, a reunion? They're my brothers and sisters. And we grew up in a very interesting family. Now, let's all come closer. Now, as we come closer, what's the challenge with our hula hoops? Huh? They're going to be threatened to hold on to myself inside this hula hoop, and my emotions might start vibrating. And as I start to vibrate, because I'm feeling some anxiety, because I don't know if one of you is going to go off on me, get really mad, get upset, because it's our family time at the beach. Then where are you? Why? We said we were going to dinner at 6 o'clock. You're not ready. Okay? Now I'm starting to vibrate. Do you know what happens when I start to vibrate and feel vibrations inside? What happens to the other hula hoops? They vibrate at the same frequency that I'm vibrating because it's called sympathetic resonance. Anxiety is transferring between these hula hoops. Unless somebody has a strong core, can calm themselves down inside, remain solid in their hula hoop, and remain connected. But if one of them starts to vibrate too much, right here, and we connect, we might have a big fight and a big reaction to blow each other apart because we can't manage ourselves inside our own hula hoop. That's why fights occur. So our anxiety is building, 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 building. Then I say something to hurt your feelings and I push you away. And now we can regulate. Now we're back split. And so there's this dynamic going on. And the closer we get, the more difficult it is to maintain self inside the hula hoop. Thank you all. Thank you. Make sense? Now, oh yeah. Now, can you understand that for all mammals, anxiety is being communicated between all mammals? So, this is why... Hang on. Stop it. Down. They're all collapsing. This is why one cow will be all by himself in a field and something will spook the cow and the cow will get anxious. Another cow will come up and go, you feeling it? I'm feeling it. Another cow will come up and go, you feeling it? I'm feeling it. Anxiety will pass through the herd. A lightning strike or a spark will happen. What happens to the herd? They stampede. I've just described the normal family system with a teenager. The teenager stirs all the hula hoops, gets everybody going. Mom and dad are all stirred up. A spark happens, mom and dad blow up, and the teenager goes, ha ha, see? Told you I live in a crazy family. And disavows that they did anything. Make sense? So anxiety travels between these hula hoops, and it happens to all mammals. So what we're dealing with here is separateness inside my hula hoop, and distinction is the foundation for togetherness. If I cannot maintain myself inside the integrity of my own hula hoop, I will overconnect with you. We will merge into a single cell. Watch what happens then. We will blow apart sooner or later. The most healthy, passionate relationships are those which can maintain their distinctiveness in their hula hoop and passionately connect. But most people, the greater significance somebody is, let's think of it as I'm in Dallas, the person I'm dating, some people tell me, is in San Francisco. We have a great long distance relationship. Right? I'm mature, they're mature. Watch what happens when the geographical distance breaks down and they're coming to visit and we are in close proximity. Is the scale of significance and challenge going up or down? You need more of a self and more of a core the more important the person becomes to you. So a lot of people say, something's wrong with my picker. What do they mean? A picker, my chooser. When I'm choosing relationships, I'm choosing bad relationships. Something's wrong with my chooser. Have you heard that?
Yes.
It's a half-truth. It's half-truth. What's going on is they can't maintain themselves in their hula hoop long enough to see clearly who the other person is. Did I lose you?
No.
They can't hang on in their own hula hoop for the process of getting to know the other person. So they collapse, they merge, there's euphoria, and they pick a bad person. Because they can't maintain the integrity. Every time somebody means anything to them, They can't disappoint them. They can't stand on their own 2 feet. They're afraid of abandonment. They use all these terms. So they collapse, merge, and they make the anxiety go away. And they've chosen and overridden a cognitive map to get to know the other person because they can't tolerate the process. So the more important person as they become to them, they can't manage themselves and they collapse, and they collapse into the relationship only to find out they're in a bad relationship. Now they got to do the work of getting out, and they couldn't do the work of staying out to begin with. Now to do the work of getting out after they're in is so much harder than even maintaining themselves before they got in. Make sense? So this is why this hula hoop is so important. So what we find is a paradox that people are amazed at, that separateness and distinction refers both to physical, emotional, psychologists, that's my typo, emotional, psychological, and spiritual separateness. So we find that the ability to stay in connection with a person of significance without being consumed by that person, without the loss of self, this is a solid self. I can stand on my own 2 feet, be balanced, not get myself from somebody else, we'll see that in a moment, not giving away myself. I can be flexible, not rigid, relate to people, and still retain who I am. You always retain who you are. You never give that away. Go ahead.
It seems like you're leading this way.
Right?
One of the bigger determinants of this is having done that for yourself, but enjoying someone else doing that also. So in other words, if you're in relationship, you're trying to hang on to yourself and differentiate, but you enjoy seeing the person you're in relationship do the same.
That's a wonderful pattern of growth. If two people take on the responsibility to grow themselves in their hula hoop in a committed relationship, it's the best gift you can give to yourself and to the relationship.
But that's the answer to not having something wrong with your picker. Is that you can say, I'm trying to differentiate, but then you pick people who aren't wanting to do this. Maybe because you like focusing on doing it yourself, but you don't want necessarily others to do it too.
No, we're getting ahead just a moment. I don't know if I like doing it for myself. I'm not sure I'm going to choose people too much that don't find the value in doing it. But I get it conceptually. It could happen as a power trip, but I'm doubting it's going to happen if I'm truly working on myself and my hula hoop. I'm going to value and appreciate other people doing it and admire and respect them.
Well, that's what I mean. That's kind of one of the indicators of you doing that.
Fair enough.
Is you enjoy seeing
others. You're not threatened by it.
That's
you're right. Rewarding it. You find the value. It's an enlivening thing. Enlivening. This helps us in relationships not to fear being engulfed, smothered, taken over. So what does a person mean when they say, I gave too much of myself? Isn't that interesting? You got to get yourself back. If you gave too much of yourself, we're going to tease that out in just a moment. So the ability to stay rooted and grounded in one's identity while you're in a significant relationship. Now, friendships will test you, but the higher up the scale we go, I want to help see where your hula hoop cracks and where you overconnect and what causes your hula hoop to crack. We're going to see some categories in just a moment. The more significant a relationship is, the more it's going to put us under a stress test so that the cracks come out. That's a good thing. But everybody says, no, something's going wrong. Something's going right when you go home to your family and your hula hoop is challenged. If you will effectively let it grow you, it's not your enemy. It's only your enemy if you don't know what to do. How to be, then everybody's your enemy. Avoid all of them. You don't like them. You see what I mean? All right, so differentiation, people really get confused about this. They think, oh, you're going to grow me up and make me separate. No. Differentiation is about getting closer and more distinct. More distinct so I can get closer to you and know you for who you really are, because I'm not afraid of losing me. But if I'm afraid of losing me, then the closer I get to you, I got to be really careful because you're going to gobble me up. Differentiation is the growth of getting more distinct, more rooted, more grounded, more confident so I can get close to you exactly how you are and I don't require you to change. Because I'm okay. Now, if I'm not okay, I got to require you to change for me to be okay. Everybody got it? Okay? So that's what this concept is about. Now, there are only two types of connection. Stay with me on this. You'll get it. There are only two types that I know of in the whole universe. If I'm going to get connected with somebody, an intimate partner, a family member, a brother or sister, a close friend, a boss, employee, relationship, if I'm going to get connected, there are only two kinds. There is a connection that includes the concept of separateness. I am me, you are you. I am not you, you are not me. I have a boundary, I'm inside my hula hoop, you are inside yours. This is connection with healthy separateness and distinction. Or you can have a connection without separateness. You can become a single cell. Do you hear how newly marrieds talk about we will become one? What they're usually talking about is a oneness with no separateness. Good luck. You will merge to begin with, and then your hula hoops will spring back into action soon, and you are two separate people. You are not one, you're one in a different sense. So we're either going to have a oneness that's differentiated or an undifferentiated oneness that's called a single cell amoeba. It's called a dictatorship. It's called there is no boundary there, we're just one. Trust me, you are not just one. That's called emotional fusion, codependency, enmeshment. Have you ever heard those terms? Like codependency, I get really weary of because it's a ubiquitous term and it was once a technical term. Now it's ubiquitous. It refers to everything. I got that. That's what we do with words. But codependency originally and should still mean if I'm in a relationship with a person who's dependent on alcohol or drugs. Got that? They are dependent on alcohol or drugs. And I become dependent on them while they are dependent on alcohol or drugs. They are dependent and I am co-dependent. I'm as dependent, not on alcohol and drugs, they are. But I'm dependent on them. Got it? What people are really meaning, apart from the technical use of that term, is low differentiation. That's the right term. You have a low differentiated individual. They can't stand on their own two feet. They can't manage their emotions. They're highly reactive and they can't find the value and they're unwilling to go through any discomfort for the sake of their own growth. They can't manage themselves. They can't ride the rides. They're avoidant people. And they're going to merge and get on everybody's raft, feed off that raft to float their boat. Got that? So codependency is really talking about low differentiation. Now, if we have a connection without separateness, the more correct term is emotional fusion, a tenacious emotional connection without psychological separateness. I am fused to you. This is what I like to call a relationship, two ticks on a dog and no dog. Does that make sense? They're sucking off of each other with no separateness. Trust me, this is a relationship of endless power struggles. Endless power struggles. Because neither have a soothing mechanism except each other. No relationship was meant to carry that heavy burden. Okay, hang on. Where did I put it? There it is. All right, we're getting to the heart and core here. So the more important or significant a person is to you, the more they matter, family member, spouse, intimate relationship, boss, business deal, the more challenging it is to the sense of yourself to hold on to the core conviction of who you are. Higher up the scale, the personal boundaries will tend to collapse. Have you ever sat in a classroom of a professor that you really admired, really, really thought highly of, and you raised your hand to make comments or ask questions? Have you ever done that? What did you want from the professor?
Affirmation.
Oh my gosh, awesome question. That was brilliant. In my 23 years of teaching this class, I've never had anybody ask that brilliant of a question, right? You long for that. You ever caught yourself asking questions, making comments, just to get that? And everybody else is frankly annoyed with you? Like, shut up. We know what you're doing. Well, I was just wondering. Oh my gosh. It's a love fest going on. Really? You were just wondering. Shut up. There's a pull because you want something from the one who's more significant. Right? Okay, here's where we're going. See if you understand this quote. It eventually became obvious to me that the universal problem for all partnerships, marriage or otherwise, business partnerships, family relationships, is not one of getting closer. That's not the problem. Rather, it is preserving self while you're in a close, significant, extremely important relationship, something that no one made of flesh and blood seems to do very well. I eventually came to define my marriage counseling as trying to help people separate so they wouldn't have to separate. Here's a paradox. We're going to see it in just a moment. Do you know the couples that I work with who complain the most about being disconnected are overly connected? They're so overly connected that one can make eye contact with the other in the room and the other one goes, "What?" That's called a connection. It's a reactive connection. I saw the look on your face and, "What are you giving me that look for?" And the other one goes, "What look? That look. What are you talking about?" "Well, that look that you give me all the time." Oh, my friends, this couple is going to say, "We're not connected." And I'm going to say, "Oh, you are so connected. The syrup is so thick between you. There's no separateness whatsoever." One walks in the room and says, "Well, why'd you put that glass right there?" The other one says, "Well, because I put it there." "Well, why'd you put it there?" "Well, I don't, because I just put it there." "Why? What are you doing with that glass there?" "Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, thick. Thick. Thick." With these couples, I cannot stop them in my office. Sometimes they'll go on for 45 minutes nonstop. I can raise my hand. They override it. The emotional fusion is so thick. It is my perception that the togetherness force is more blind to separate or individuality than separate is to togetherness. By this I mean the movement towards togetherness between bodies seems to be natural. And precisely because of this, the force to be separate must be vigilant. People like to glom together. Boom, 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 boom. It's a rumble line. Everybody's going. Everybody's connecting. Everybody's in the room. To maintain separateness is a challenge. And connect. Coming together seems to be a natural process. There appears to be nothing in life itself that checks the togetherness force from snuffing out separateness except the vigilance to protect itself. Especially in family relationships and significant relationships. So here's the paradox. Healthy togetherness is predicated on a living organism's ability to maintain its shape while the pressure to collapse increases. You can still connect with a person even when they're pressuring and making threats, if you can maintain the integrity and balance inside your own hula hoop. You can still connect. Maybe not the way they prefer, but you can remain present in the room. Nobody has to say, "In order to be me, I've got to leave." Nobody has to say that. In order to be you, you can stand right here in the room. The other person screaming, crying, making threats, waving a gun, you can still stand in your own hula hoop and be quite okay because you know who you are. You don't have to say, in order to be me, you got to leave. You don't have to say that. Okay? Emotional fusion over connection creates love-hate. Does that make sense? A psychological connection, if indeed O.J. Simpson killed Nicole Simpson Brown, if indeed, do you know the reason he gave Montel Williams? When Montel asked him, did you kill Nicole? He said, this is a common answer, if I did, it was because I loved her too much. What was he saying? Okay, that was brilliant. For those who are going to be listening to this, the question was, what was the question? If I did, it's because I loved her too much. What did he mean? She said, well, he did. Okay, that's not love.
He couldn't separate.
That's right, he could not separate. So when she's across the room, talking to other people, laughing at a social setting, and he's watching, there's an invisible rubber band attached to his ego. Even though there's 15 to 20 feet of space, she's attached. So later he can come up to her and say, so you know those guys? She says, no, I just met them. You know, I've never seen you laugh, and your eyes were just dancing, and you don't laugh that way with me. Thick emotional fusion. There's no psychological separateness. That's intense emotional fusion. This is when somebody goes to divorce, the other spouse shows up in the parking lot, shoots them and shoots themselves. This is when child custody comes to pick up the child for child custody arrangements, the guy shoots the child, shoots himself, shoots the wife. That's intense emotional fusion. A lot of people confuse it with love. That's a lack of psychological separateness. That's the intense version. It creates love, hate, master, slave. We don't want that. How about this? You got to love this. Let's see if you can hear it. This is Woody Allen. If you like Woody Allen, this is about Leonard Zelig. The movie is called Zelig. And Zelig has a psychological problem. He becomes and takes the shape of whomever that he's around. Okay? So we'll start with the clinical example first. See if you can hear it.
Dr. Fletcher arranges a series of experiments and invites the skeptical staff to observe. With the doctors watching, Zelig becomes a perfect psychiatrist. When two Frenchmen are brought in, Zelig assumes their characters and speaks reasonable French. In the company of a Chinese person, he begins to develop Oriental features. By now, word has gotten out to the press, and the public, thirsting for thrills and novelty, is immediately captivated. The clamor is so great that Dr. Alan Sindel is forced to issue a statement.
We're just beginning to realize the dimensions of what could be the scientific medical phenomenon of the age, and possibly of all time.
Fresh stories roll off the press every day about Zelig and his puzzling condition. Although the doctors claim to have the situation in hand, no two can agree on a diagnosis.
I'm convinced that it's glandular in nature, and although there's no evidence now of any misfunction, I'm sure that further tests will show a problem in the secretions.
I'm certain it's something he picked up from eating Mexican food.
This manifestation is neurological in origin. Now, this patient is suffering from a brain tumor, and I should not be surprised if within several weeks he died. Now, we have not as yet been able to locate the tumor, but we're still looking.
Ironically, within 2 weeks' time, it is Dr. Bersky himself who dies of a brain tumor. Leonard Zelig is fine.
So Zelig is a person that in whose presence he finds himself, he adopts their characteristics. Does he have a strong hula hoop or a weak hula hoop? He's getting himself from whomever he's around. Got that? And how about this one? You will like this.
You were so lost you didn't even know what kind of eggs you like. Yes. Yes. Yes, that's right. With a priest, you wanted scrambled. With a deadhead, it was fried. With the other guy, the bug guy, it was poached. Now it's like, egg whites only. Thank you very much.
That is called changing your mind.
No, that's called not having a mind of your own. Maggie, what are you doing? You really want that guy up there to drag you up Annapurna for your honeymoon? You do not want to climb Annapurna.
Yes, I do.
So what did he figure out about Maggie? Thanks for flexing with me. Yeah, now she said her comeback was...
Yes, I do.
No, her comeback first was, it's about changing your mind. His comeback was, no, Maggie. It's about not having a mind of your own. Right? So he's challenging herself is too flexible and she gets it from too many sources. How did he figure it out?
He asked all of her exes, or kind of engaged fiancés.
And what was the data he was focusing on right here?
Eggs.
Bless you. Eggs. So he figured out, yeah. With this person, you liked your eggs this way. With this person, you liked your eggs this way. Did she really like her eggs her way?
No,
she took on the correct characteristics of whomever she was around. Is that a solid self? It's a too flexible self. If it's an overly flexible self that gets itself from others. All right, now, you got the concept. I want to go through at least three, but I've listed 10. I'm not going to go through all 10. Here's the question, everybody. The question is, inside a person's hula hoop, from what source are they gaining a self? This is the question. Now, for all of us, it begins with the reflections of others to us so we can grow a self. Nobody's born with an innate sense of self. Does that make sense? So the significant people in our world, we're looking at their faces and their responses to gain a sense of who we are. And they are significant to us. So a reflected sense of self is appropriate for infants, children, adolescents, and barely emerging young adults, because they're all getting their sense of self from the reflections of significant people in their world. This reduces anxiety, increases positive esteem, and the responses of others tell us who we are. We become aware of ourselves through this process. However, there comes a time in adulthood when the early process has done its job, and now it's time to make a shift and gain our sense of self from inside our hula hoop, or you might say if from your faith, from God, from some source, and you have to challenge yourself and say, who am I? Not just who do others think I am, who am I? Now, this reflected sense of self, let's illustrate it briefly with a mirror. Okay? So let's say... You're so good. Let's say, in an early part of a relationship, I'm in relationship with you, you're in relationship with me. Now what's happening, understandably, is I'm holding up a mirror and you're holding up a mirror, and I like the reflections of myself that you are giving back to me. Did that make sense? So when you respond nicely to me, what do I think of me? So I love all these affirming responses, especially if we're in love, because you are looking at the reflection I am giving back to you because I like you. Correct? So I'm a significant person. You want to be loved by me, and I love you, and I'm giving you back really affirming responses. Do you love me yet? Do I love you yet? In this early stage, what am I really in love with? Yes. It's a twin. It's a disguised twin narcissism. I love the feedback that you're giving me.
So my question is, with this reflection of the mirror, are these things you're finding that you have in common?
Could be.
Likes and dislikes, or are we talking about behaviors?
It can be any of those. Anne-Marie, it's whatever feeds the ego. I need to be loved. I want to be loved. I desire to be loved. I want to be found attractive. You find me attractive. Maybe I do cute little things. And you go, oh my gosh, that is the cutest thing I've ever seen. So I keep doing them. Of course, we know by research, the very things that attract people to each other later would be the very things that annoy them the most. We know that. Because they've overexceeded their limits. So in the early stages, you're getting a reflection from me, and I'm getting a reflection from you. Does that make sense? That's a reflected sense of self. I love the picture of me that you are reflecting back to me. Now, there's nothing wrong with that as long as we know what's going on and we don't become dependent upon it. You got that? Dependent. So let's take another concept besides the mirror. And we're going to say it's my Easter basket, right? But inside this Easter basket, I've got some precious eggs. Okay, Russell, I'm not going to use you. Okay, Sandy. Okay? Now, Sandy, you're my good friend, and we are in relationship with each other, and for some reason, for some reason, I think, for many good reasons, you are just the cat's meow. Meow. You... way high on my scale of significance. Okay? Now, she thinks that that's really a great thing, and it is a good thing. Because she likes feeling good, and she likes being wanted, and for some reason I want her. So, I say to Sandy, Sandy, you are so incredibly important to me. I find you so incredibly attractive. You are so wonderful. I love you to death. Sandy, here's my precious self-esteem egg. Okay? It's my self-esteem. I love you so much. Sandy, I'm going to give you my precious self-esteem egg. Okay?
Okay.
Don't drop it. Okay? That's my self-esteem.
Okay.
I think you are so important, incredible, and valuable, awesome, talented, and gifted. I love you so much. I'm going to give you my personal identity egg. I mean, this is the real me. I don't give this to many people. I'm giving it to you, Sandy. Now, Sandy, I think you're also so incredible, so important, so significant. I'm going to give you my feel-good and what I think about me egg. I'm going to entrust you with that. Now, out of, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4 eggs, I've given Sandy 3 of my precious eggs. So in my office, I will use poker chips. I'm going mostly all in. And Sandy, you matter so much to me. I'm going mostly all in. Out of 100 poker chips, you got 90 of them. Does Sandy feel good? Does Sandy take this as a compliment?
Maybe at first.
Oh, maybe at first. She says, I am so important, so valuable. I love it. Love it. He's entrusting me with 3 out of the 4 of his precious eggs. Oh my gosh, he doesn't do that with anybody. He did it with me. Got it? Who's got my eggs?
Somebody else.
Somebody else got my precious eggs. Where's my focus? Uh-huh. Sandy, what are you doing with my precious identity egg? You taking care of it? We need to talk. Can I see your phone? You talking to anybody? You telling me email anybody? I'm not going to give you my precious identity egg unless you're true blue up front. What'd you do last night? When'd you go to bed? Okay, at first this is a compliment. What does it become later? A heavy burden, because I have shifted all the value outside of my hula hoop and entrusted her with the value. Now who have I got to control, watch, and run around and make sure I pay attention to? So what we want to do is we want to keep these precious eggs inside my hula hoop and bring my whole person to this relationship standing on my own 2 feet. And she can bring her whole person standing on her own 2 feet. And we can passionately connect in wonderful ways and become more significant to each other as we learn and grow and hang on inside, because we're growing more important to each other, not less important to each other. So we don't, as more important, collapse. We hang on to ourselves and grow upward and bring ourselves to this relationship. But those who get their sense of self from everybody else, they have to follow those people around and constantly touch base. They have to call and go, "Hey, how you doing?" "Oh, doing all right. Well, you know, I'm just wondering, how are you doing? Because, you know, you had that frowny look on your face when you left lunch, and I'm just checking to see if you're okay." Wink, 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 wink. Who am I checking to see is okay? Maybe myself. So what my friend doesn't know is, under the guise of care, I've shifted too much of importance and value over to this side, and I'm checking on them out of care so that I can be okay. They'll figure it out after a while, and it'll be a burden, and they'll probably start avoiding me. Can you feel it when somebody's pulling on you like that? Can you feel it when they say, "Oh, I just care about you"? Can you feel the reflected sense of self underneath that statement? Oh, they care about you because they're attached to you. Thus, they have to monitor you. Does that make sense? Okay. Then number two, an overdependency, here we are, on other validation. Now, there's nothing wrong with validating people. There's nothing wrong with getting validation. When is it nice to get validated? Before you do something or after you do something? Oh, there was a pause. When do you want validation? After you do something noble and courageous and scares the weebie-jeebies, but you rise up and you challenge yourself and you do it, and everybody goes, "Great job, awesome!" Isn't that when we validate our kids and those we love? "You did it, you mastered your anxiety, you faced your biggest fears, I'm so proud of you." But a lot of people want too much validation on the front end, and they become dependent on everybody's validation, affirmation. Now, in my office, this is how arguments take place. And I'm always curious when people are arguing and fighting. And when they say, "We are fighting all the time, we are arguing all the time." 9 times out of 10, high percentage, it's a struggle over validation. So one person says, "We were at that party the other night, and you went over there and you were talking to your friend most of the evening." And the other person says,
"No,
I wasn't over there talking to that person most of the evening." And the other person says, "Yes, you were." What's the other person say?
No, I wasn't.
"Yes, you were."
See, that's when I would get up and walk away.
Okay. The other person says, "No, I wasn't." The other person says, "Yes, you were. Do not sit here in front of this therapist that we are paying good money to and lie. You're lying." Now, what's this a struggle over? Who's going to validate whose reality? This person says, "My reality is correct, and I'm going to badger you until you admit it, comply, and agree, and affirm how I see the world and see you. We're going to keep talking about this till we reach a resolution." That's when I tell people, all the talking from this point on is not going to solve this. Go ahead.
So, when there's a difference in perception, what yes. really happened?
Yes.
And you're saying to that person, "Yes, you did."
Yes.
So what does the other person do when they know they didn't and just...
They don't try to prove it.
Okay.
Because proof is not the solution. Need and dependency on validation is the problem. Convincing the other person that their narrative is incorrect after they've constructed the narrative and want to fit you into it? Follow me?
She feels bad by the accusation. You know,
who feels bad?
What if she feels bad?
Who's the she?
The person you were talking to.
Oh, okay. So she's... Well, she feels bad because I'm assuming that she did those behaviors? I think that's what you're saying.
She didn't feel that she did.
No, she didn't believe that she did.
Right.
And we don't know right yet in this point in the argument if she's just as fused as the other person and she's playing a game to block and he's being correct and she's blocking. Follow me? Okay, he's saying, you did this. She says, I did not. She's lying. She's lying to jerk his chain.
Okay.
You said, follow me?
Right.
So it's a game of emotional fusion.
Okay.
So we're still into the game of who's going to admit and be on top and win the power struggle. And she says, I am not going to admit that you are correct. But I don't know who's correct.
Right.
I wasn't there.
Yeah.
Correct? So she's going to have to stand her ground and say, I know that you think what you think, but my perspective is I did not do those behaviors. Here's my perspective. She can state clearly in simple declarative sentences her position. Got it? What if the other person says, I don't buy it? There's a gap. But what I'm looking for is why does somebody need so much validation if they're convinced their perspective is the correct perspective? Why do they have to get the other person to admit it is what I'm curious about.
Because they gave all their eggs away to that person, so they have to have validation.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because what I'm wondering is how much poker chips do they have on this side of the table? How much emotional fusion is going on that there can't be two perspectives about the same event? Why can't there be? Because this person says, I have all my poker chips and all my eggs in your basket, and I've got to bring you down because I'm out of control, the power balance isn't the way I want it, I've got to bring you down to my perspective and you got to admit it on my terms. What if the other person can't? What if they don't see it that way?
Right?
Agree to disagree?
No, you can't agree to disagree. I mean, you can agree to disagree that Obama is a good president. You can't agree to disagree when somebody says, I'm opening up a separate checking account. I want to have sex and you don't. Let's agree to disagree. I want to have children. You don't. I don't like how the money is being spent. Let's agree to disagree. Agree to disagree is a faulty notion. It only works in ideas in the brain. When it comes to real life, you're not going to agree to disagree. I want to put money in a house, in a lake house. I don't. Let's agree to disagree. Well, how are you going to disagree? These are behaviors. Okay?
I have a question about that.
I don't want to get off. Okay. Just a moment. I want you to see when two people are constantly fighting over reality, I'm curious as to why one reality has to dominate the other. That's all. If one has an excessive need for validation that their perspective is right, I just want to know why. So if one person says, you're lying, and continually badgers the other person, it's a power struggle over validation, not reality. There's room for different realities. Does that make sense? So one is hooked to the other, and I tell people, I think your boat and trailer is inordinately hooked to their Suburban, and you're in the back, and every time they go down the highway and turn left, you're screaming, turn right, and your boat and trailer are going right with the Suburban. Could we unhook them? Because if we can't unhook them, your only solution is to control them. Right? That's excessive fusion, and there's no room for two people's perspective. And there's a constant power struggle over who's more right, and the other one has to acknowledge it the way this person sees it. Well, that's what I'm curious about. Why? Oh, now if all of your eggs in that basket, that makes sense. So then you have to get them to listen, accept, and understand you the way you require them to. Did you get that? You need to get them to listen, accept, and understand you and your way of seeing the world exactly the way you do, this will create incessant power struggles. Because what if they can't? What if they're a separate person and they don't see it that way? What if they think you're neurotic and it's because you grew up in a messed up family and this is how you see it? And of course they grew up in a normal family and they see it differently. Okay. One more thing, then we'll have some questions. This is a big one. This right here, if I could help all of you work on something, it would be your reflected sense of self, your need for validation, or your want of validation. And this one, over-personalizing the action, behaviors, or words of everybody else. Over-personalizing. This is what I like to tell my clients. It's okay to learn to be affected and not be infected. You can have your emotions without your emotions having you. That's what adults do. They can fully feel their emotions and not be driven by their emotions. Bill will talk about having emotions later. Sharing emotions, because you have them. Having emotions without your emotions having you. Having emotions without the emotions having you. Well, this is the same thing. If we over-personalize and make personal other people's actions or behaviors, you're hooked to them. You have an invisible rubber band that you are now hooked to them. Make sense? What if you're in a relationship with a problem drinker, alcoholic, drug abuser? This is hyperbole. You have a family member. You're in relationship with a person who has a substance abuse problem. And you actually over-personalize their behaviors and say, their problem is because of me. Make sense? Are you over-personalizing this person's behaviors? Mm-hmm. If you over-personalize, then you might say, if I make a really nice dinner, keep the house perfect, walk on tiptoes, smile at the right time, then they won't drink. Got that? That's over-personalizing or taking personally somebody else's actions and behaviors as you are the causing agent. That's an invisible, tenacious connection. You are overly connected. Now their bad behaviors will control your life. Their bad behaviors are their own. Their good behaviors are their own. They're not because of you. It's because of them. There's a boundary. You're in your hula hoop. They're in their hula hoop. They are who they are. You are who you are. Now, you don't absorb everybody else's behaviors. Take this perspective. And then we'll take questions. We're almost done. If you really believe the other person's behaviors is something you should personalize, that it's because of you, then take it responsibility, own it, and correct the part that's about you. If you really believe their behaviors are because of you, then take it, own it, make a correction. Got it? If their behavior is something that is not about you, but in truth about them, why are you reacting and personalizing it? That's a question I have for you. Why do you absorb other people's behavior? That's not about them. That's about you. Nobody asked you to do that. You voluntarily did it. I want to know how you learned to do it. Oh, I just take everybody's behaviors as I'm responsible. Really? Where'd you learn that? Well, I'm the firstborn child and child of two adult alcoholics, and I learned I took all responsibility for everything. Really? Could we unlearn that? I think we can learn it because you learned it. You're not responsible for everybody. In fact, the more you try to control everybody else, it demonstrates that you yourself are out of control. You personalize everything, and you're probably an irritant and wearing everybody out. You're teaching, you're correcting, you're giving advice because you think it's all your responsibility to do so. That's a surefire way to run everybody off. Okay, now these are the top three that create a lack of separateness between the hula hoops and absorb too much in and create emotional fusion. We won't go through them. Always having an underlying goal to correct, influence, and change other people. Every time you have a conversation, if your underlying goal is to influence and change them, it's emotional fusion. You lack separateness. Why do you need to change them? Why is it your goal? Oh, because they'll be better people and I'm the expert. Trust me, they haven't hired you. Okay? Focusing on the other person as a solution to your own problems. It's when you tell everybody else, you hold the key. Really? They hold the key? You hold the key to my happiness. Really? I thought you held the key. Oh, I gave it away a long time ago. Got it? That's fusion. Over-personalizing, it's redundant. I didn't pick it up when I made this. Having an intensely negative focus on other people, resentment and lack of forgiveness creates emotional fusion. You can't let people be who they are. You have resentment. You have an invisible rubber band connecting you to them. Let it go. I can teach you to let it go, and you don't even need their cooperation. Do you know that? Do you know you do not need anybody's cooperation to be free? But everybody says, I need everybody else's cooperation so I can reach resolution. That's emotional fusion. You'd like it, you don't need it. Got it? Lastly, overcaring, helping, rescuing, fusion. Viewing one's own life through the eyes of others, what will they think? Emotional fusion. Living life to please, emotional fusion. It's all a reflected sense of self. Okay, we got about 7 minutes. Room for you. Sorry I blitzed through that, and thank you for being patient through my technical malfunction. I think Leonard Zelig did it in The Selfless Man. He bombed my whole computer. What are your thoughts? Because this is about growing a solid self and how the self breaks down and overconnects. Does it make sense to you? Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Okay, so say if one of the people is in their hula hoop and they're trying to grow.
Yep.
And the other person is controlling and doing what you just did to me. Right.
Overstepping their hula hoop.
But see, this person in their hula hoop is not supposed to go outside their hula hoop to correct their behavior.
Correct.
So what do you do about that? You just allow them to do it?
You have resiliency and you can determine your own life. What do you mean, allow them to do it?
Well, no, but I mean, like, if you can't change that person. You can't,
that's correct.
You can't get outside your hula hoop.
You can make declarative sentences.
Okay.
If you continue to do this, I'm leaving the room. That's not a threat. It's I'm defining who I am, right? It's a declarative sentence. Let me give you a word just briefly. Let's stay with it. Let me give you a word about the concept called boundaries. It's a good concept because what I'm talking about is being inside our hula hoop is a boundary. You got that? You're inside your hula hoop. You know where you begin and end and the other people begin. It's a separateness. It's a boundary like a fence around your backyard. Got the concept? Here's how people misuse the concept of boundaries in the package of emotional fusion. Misuse the concept. Ready? You can't talk to me this way. I have boundaries. Now, how did I use the concept?
Against you.
To direct my life? Whose life was I directing? That's right. If I've got boundaries, why do I need to announce it? Did you get that? If you continue to do this, I'll do X, Y, and Z. Who am I trying to influence? Okay, so everybody takes the concept and then uses the good concept to change everybody else. If you continue to talk this way, I'll leave. Okay, that can be an announcement, but I want to see what happens next. If the person continues to talk that way and then they say, I'm not kidding, they're trying to influence and change everybody else. Just stand up and go, thank you. I don't wish to participate. See you later. That's called having a boundary. I'm directing my own life. I'm not telling everybody else what to do. Correct? Now, how you do that in maturity...
But you sometimes it's okay to state a boundary, as long as you're going to follow through. Is that what you mean?
I guess I want to state a boundary as defining myself, not influencing and changing everybody else.
Right.
So I'm looking at motives in the heart. I encourage my clients to make simple declarative sentences. But when you make a simple declarative sentence, pay attention to the motive in your heart. Simple declarative sentence. I think it's a beautiful fall day. That sentence stands on its own two feet. I stand by my personal conviction. I think it's a beautiful fall day. Do you hear the motive in my heart? I'm defining who I am. What if I said, I think it's a beautiful fall day?
I think you're wrong.
Okay, at least I got a response. So I can take the same sentence and define who I am, what I can do, what I will do, what I won't do, and why. You can decide to dialogue, but I'm not meaning to influence and change you directly. I'm defining who I am in love and in humility. This is what I can do. I'm defining who I am. But if I'm using the whole concept to change everybody else, which we're very creative at doing, taking good concepts and use them for immature ways. I know it's complicated. I apologize for that. Stay with the concept. You'll get it. I just want you to see how hula hoops break down and close the gap and become overly connected and create power struggles and endless fights with people that we really love, because we're trying to influence, change them, and all kinds of motives.
So do you address this?
Well, it can be a dialogue. Again, we're going to see next week right from the start that the same concept, we're going to talk about the emotional system next week. Look, here's high differentiation. Right here, high differentiation. Let's call it high emotional maturity. Here's low emotional maturity, low differentiation. Make sense? Low, do not have a solid self, can't manage their emotions, high reactivity, and they can't find the value for what they're doing. They're unwilling to experience discomfort for the sake of growth. They can't stand or tolerate process. High can. Got it? Take the concepts that you told me the first night, create a really a good relationship, and you would put in the circle of relationship. You with me? The same concepts play out differently between these groups of people. High differentiated, high mature, growing people can handle the concept called trust. Low differentiated people who cannot manage themselves put this in a fusion package, and trust means to them, all of my eggs and all of my poker chips are in your basket. Can I trust you? I need to trust you. Prove to me you're trustworthy. I'm threatened, insecure, can't stand on my own two feet. You could hurt me. All my power is in your control. All of my keys, the key to my life, everything. Can I trust you? Do you see, where's my focus? Do you know mature people stand on their own two feet and go, I hope I can trust you. You seem like a trustworthy person. We'll find out over time if you're messing up, not paying attention, and really cheating on me, taking money. We'll find out. And the day I found out, I'll have a good response to it. But all of my life is not within your control. I hope I can trust you. That's what mature people say. They balance out the word trust. Because the concept plays out between these two groups of people. This one can manage themselves. This one can't. Same concept. So my deal is, high differentiated growing people who take responsibility for their life can talk about what's going on between them. These can't. It creates a fight, power struggle, reactivity, and lots of emotions, and they'll be up all night. These people can have the dialogue. These can't. So when these two groups go to workshops and the same formula is advocated for both groups fit in our package, these can do it, these can't. And they have a bad experience. Make sense? You still with me? You getting it? Next week we start with that and talk about the emotional system. I hope I haven't confused you. You're doing great. Please, really, read the chapters that I've posted. They will make sense. Blessings to you this week. See you next week.